You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
In the beginning, there was darkness. Then, out of the void, came fire, smoke, Roto. Fantasy excellence begins here.
This is your time.
The Roto Experts in the Morning starts now.
It is Monday, March 20th, 2017, and this is the Roto Experts in the Morning. Alongside Matt Modica, Fantasy Executive Corey Parson, I am Greg Sussman. What a weekend it was, gentlemen. First two rounds of the NCAA tournament is in the books. And after a lackluster couple days, picked up a little bit on Saturday, and then yesterday's what we look forward to. Yesterday was, as they say, madness. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning. Yeah, yesterday was Bracket Buster Sunday. It's going to be interesting. The Sweet 16's got some really interesting teams. I'm excited. This is a great week coming up. Tout weekend, NFBC weekend, Sweet 16. Let's do this.
Yeah, absolutely. Fantasy Executive. The madness was, of course, fully upon us last night. We saw a ton of upsets, including Wisconsin over Nova Saturday. We saw South Carolina at home take down Duke yesterday. It was just a really, really fun weekend. Louisville fell as well, of course, to the team of destiny in Michigan.
Yeah, no doubt. Big weekend in NCAA tournament, big weekend in the WBC, just a big weekend in sports all together this weekend. Big shout out to a place that I've been to many times, Columbia, South Carolina.
Absolutely.
And South Carolina Gamecocks did us all a favor and eliminated the evil Blue Devils of Duke University. So good to see Coach K and that group go down. I did not have the Blue Devils in my Sweet 16, so I feel pretty good about that. I'm only taking eight teams to the Sweet 16, though.
That's not so good.
No, it's not.
That's actually terrible.
Yeah, it's actually pretty bad. You know, and really, thanks to a clean South region, I'm clean in the South.
Oh, that's a nice feeling. Is your Final Four intact?
No, my Final Four is not intact, thanks to the Villanova Wildcats.
That's okay. I mean, 3 out of 4 is not bad, because I feel like most people had Nova or Duke coming out of there.
Yeah, so you feel okay. My Final Four is, I still have Kansas in the mix, I still have UCLA in the mix, and I still have Gonzaga in the mix.
Now, how are you doing in your Survivor?
My Survivor is, I had the Tar Heels, so I got that W.
I
took the Tar Heels early because I got the Tar Heels
out.
I got the Tar Heels out, so it's going to be interesting to see who my picks will be on Thursday, so I haven't gotten that far yet, but so far I'm intact.
I was eliminated yesterday, actually, from the Survivor, because we made a push to go in a direction. As you guys know, I've been all about the Pac-12 for a while. I pushed it, right? So I still believe that Oregon was going to beat Louisville. So I took Louisville over Michigan, thinking Oregon would then beat Louisville.
Yeah,
didn't work out that way.
No, it did not. That was a tough call right there. So Louisville did not come through. I'm about to say for their owners. Louisville did not come through for their owners.
For their owners, that's true.
Owners,
I owned them yesterday.
Yeah, I had them going to the Final Four as well.
There you go.
Yeah, so there you go right there. I had some nice picks in Survivor, so I feel good about that.
Good.
But so far the tournament is what it is. I'm looking at my overall percentile. I am in the 57th percentile, which is, you know, like a little better than half. It's not really that good.
Okay, no.
What about you?
I'm doing okay. You know, my bracket's doing all right. As I said, I had 3 out of my 4 Final Four teams still in the mix here. I got high in the Pac-12, right?
Yeah.
So let's see. Sweet 16 wise, this is very bad. This is much worse than I expected.
Really?
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I have 9 teams left.
Okay, 16. So you got one more than me.
I got one more than you. Yeah, one more.
You were judging me a few minutes
ago. I was. You know, that's those damn Maryland Terrapins. That's the reason.
Yeah, fear the turtle.
Yeah.
I got 8 teams left, but I do have Arizona versus UCLA in the final with Arizona winning.
As you know. So we're both there, man. We're both in a good spot to cash in a little bit with our brackets, which would be cool, obviously. What was your favorite game of the weekend, guys?
You know what? I really, really liked that Wichita State-Kentucky game. I mean, that was great. Wichita State had the opportunities, but Kentucky just locked it down on defense. I mean, those blocks at the end, you know, it was they just stepped it up. I really thought Wichita State was going to pull it off, but it was not to be.
No, it was not about you, Corey. What was your favorite game of the weekend?
And when you say favorite game of the weekend, you're talking about NCAA tournament-wise?
I do.
I didn't get to really physically watch too many tournament games. I was keeping tabs on that Kentucky-Wichita State, just like Matt mentioned over there yesterday. I did get a chance. Me and my nephew and my sister got a chance to sit down and watch the Tar Heels in the second half. So it was good to see them go on that 9-0 run to end the game.
Yeah, that was a great game. Many good games yesterday. Like Michigan-Louisville was awesome. Michigan-Ohio State in the first round was really, really good. Oregon-Rhode Island was fantastic.
Yeah,
Rhode Island had, multiple chances there to win it. And they couldn't. They got blocked a couple times. To me, the best game that I thought was also Wichita State and Kentucky, because you had this kid, that point guard, who was just incredible, and he was bringing it back, and he didn't touch the ball. He didn't touch the ball on that chance to take the lead possession, the second to last possession. He touched the ball, and then on the other side of that, they also got blocked two times in a row. I mean, it was a brutal way to lose for Wichita, but they're going to be back. If Greg Marshall stays there, they're going to be back. They got a very, very similar team next year. It's going to be a fun. The tournament's the best.
Yeah, Wichita State did fall victim to some terrible seeding.
I
think they deserve better.
They did. I'm sure you can say that about a lot of teams. A lot of teams will feel that way. Like I'm sure Nova feeling right now. Wisconsin's a bit underseeded as well.
Yeah, Wisconsin. Yeah, and that is true. But there's nothing you can do about that. You're the number one overall seed. You're supposed to take them down.
You are first time number one overall seed lost as early since 2010, when Kansas and Bill Self did it.
Well, Madison Square Garden can't be too happy. They lost Nova and Duke heading into this weekend. So
yeah, so
they got the Gamecocks though.
so basically, they do have the Gamecocks for sure. That's not who they wanted, like in New York, right?
No,
you wanted Nova. The only team that they're really happy about, I think, is Wisconsin. Like they don't mind Wisconsin. Of course, they'd rather Nova, but they don't mind Wisconsin. There's a lot of Wisconsin population in the area. Florida's fine. Baylor, South Carolina's a disaster. That's a disaster. Like, that game is very bad. There's no surprise to me that's the early game, by the way, on Friday. Because Wisconsin and Florida, at least from my knowledge of Manhattan, Corey, like, there's plenty of Wisconsin and Florida fans around.
I guess you can say that. As far as, well, you see, I'm biased, though. You feel what I mean? I would know more people from South Carolina.
Because, that live here?
Or just yeah, that
oh,
live
okay.
here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because
okay.
I obviously I went to school. You
went to school there, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
so you disagree.
People.
Okay, that's fine.
I don't want to say I disagree. I don't think the Gamecocks are a big root across the country, though. And you know, so I'm in a bubble where I know more than being down in, you know, Columbia and those parts for so many years. So, I don't know. But I know Wisconsin is a big root, though.
So I didn't know about... I didn't know much about South Carolina until last night, where I, like... Not the state, but, like, the school.
And yeah, yeah. And where's the state?
Where is it next to North Carolina?
Where is that? So I had read about the school, about the season a little bit. Now, how much do you know about their season this year?
No, not much. I don't know much about their season this year. I'll be honest with you on that.
Right. So I had read that... Number one, like, so Darius Thornwell, who is their best player and, like, the SEC player of the year and all that stuff, like, he was suspended for a while because he got, like, arrested last May. He started the season, then the arrest came out. So Frank Martin had to suspend him.
What did he do?
Marijuana.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought he did something.
No, it was possession of marijuana and driving with a suspended license.
Mm-hmm.
That was about a year ago. You don't want to do that.
No.
And basically, he was booked into jail. Paid a fine.
They put him in jail for that?
No. He was booked. No. He was booked, and then he just paid a fine and got out of it.
Okay.
And basically that came out. He, like, played the first six games of the year. Then that came out. So Frank Martin suspended him indefinitely after that.
Okay.
After it came out. Not, you know, before it came out. Suspended him indefinitely. And then eventually he was reinstated and he became the player of the year. So basically he played the first couple of games. Then, like, the schedule softened up, so he got suspended for those games. And then they played SEC play and they came back.
Yeah, no doubt.
And Frank Martin had basically kicked a couple of players off the team, and there's bad apples there. But then Thornwell came back, and now South Carolina is headed to the Sweet 16. What did you guys think of this game being played in South Carolina? I know there's a lot of controversy about that. And so the reason, of course, it was played in Greensville and not in Greensboro was because of the HB2 law, which involves transgenders having to go to the bathroom, going to bathrooms of their birth gender. And it caused a lot of controversy. The NBA moved their All-Star game from Charlotte over to New Orleans. And now the NCAA basically said, listen, we're not coming back until this law is overturned. And instead they went to Greensville, where they haven't been forever, because they refused to play games in South Carolina because the Confederate flag was up at the State House.
Yeah.
So in 2015, they took that flag down, and the NCAA returned to South Carolina. Not voluntarily.
No, I just want to throw that out there.
It's fine. I appreciate you getting me all the news there.
Yeah.
So they took it. They did take it down ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
And so the NCAA returned there, and that is the closest regional spot for Duke. So that's why they played there, as did UNC. But South Carolina also, interestingly enough, got placed there. And do you think, Matt, and not that we ever will cry for Duke, any of us, we all hate Duke and whatnot, we think Duke got a little screwed here playing this game, literally a road game in South Carolina?
I mean, not really. I mean, I understand why it was moved, rightfully so. But, I mean, Duke, after that, after the ACC tournament, the way they were looking, this was a big shock. I mean, I think Charles Barkley's breakdown after the game was pretty great. That was the worst first half he ever seen and one of the best second halves he's ever seen. So, I mean, I got to blame it all on Duke. South Carolina was really impressive, though. I mean, shout out to them. And you know what? You got to win the games that you have to play. So, you know what? Too bad for Duke. Let's move on.
The argument that I've heard is that, listen, Duke, even though their record in Greensboro is obviously very, very good, they have lost in Greensboro. They lost to Lehigh there. They lost to Mercer there. So they do have losses in Greensboro. But the fact is, South Carolina certainly motivated by a home crowd. They were the better team last night. Don't get me wrong, Corey. But the home crowd didn't hurt.
No, it didn't. But, I mean, come on. This is Duke University.
Yeah.
This is the Duke Blue Devils. This is not some, you know, run-of-the-mill random program over here. This is a big-time program with, listen, there's more hate towards Duke than there is Duke fans, but Duke has a big fan base. You know how far Greenville is from Raleigh?
Not far at all.
Like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's nothing. I've seen Duke fans on the other side of the country.
Sure.
They expected a whole bunch of Duke fans to be in Madison Square Garden this week.
They would
have
got
You
them.
Mean Duke fans wouldn't have been, can't go an hour and a half away?
It's not that Duke fans could
you
get
have,
there.
You have Greensboro and a ton of Gamecock fans.
Yeah.
And with North Carolina being in that region.
Correct.
You know the Carolina fans are going to stay back.
And help support
the South Carolina Gamecocks, which they did a good job of doing that.
Well, I mean, South Carolina put up like 65 points in that second half.
It's more points than Coach K has ever allowed us in a half.
Good for him.
Ever.
Good for him.
It's a nice job. Frank Martin gets South Carolina to the Sweet 16 for the first time in their history. Their history.
Wow, I never knew they'd never been in this. They had some good teams.
Alex English played for that team.
And a little bit after that, in the early 90s, they had some good teams also. But they never made it to the Sweet 16?
Never made it to the Sweet 16.
Wow.
So now the ACC, who got seven teams in, only one advances to the Sweet 16. Of course, that's North Carolina. While the Big Ten, who everyone said was down, they got Michigan in there. They got Wisconsin in there. Purdue in there. Pac-12, 3 out of 4. The USC game against Baylor was also an awesome game, by the way. So good job by them. That's the only team that didn't make it. Big 12 got a bunch of teams in there. Basically, everyone doing okay. Except the ACC, SEC, of course.
Yeah, and speaking of your Pac-12, and maybe we talk about this when we get back or whatever the case may be.
Okay, continue.
But at some point, how do you feel about Lonzo Ball?
Lonzo or LeVar?
The Pops.
LeVar.
LeVar, yeah.
So I feel like he considers himself a marketing genius, right? Like,
yeah.
He's already marketing his sons that are in high school.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's putting unnecessary pressure on all of his kids, of course,
yeah.
Lonzo and the other sons. But ultimately, to my opinion, wherever Lonzo goes in the draft, like, somehow the Knicks get him, please.
Yeah.
Like, wherever he ultimately ends up, his father's not going to be the story. It's going to be just Lonzo, like, if he can play or not.
Yeah.
Like, yes, it's extra pressure. Like, your pop said this, and maybe I'll get some flack in the locker room. Ultimately, it's a marketing ploy that, you know, maybe it'll make his kids extra money one day, make him extra money one day. But ultimately, I think it'll be decided, like, what Lonzo's doing at UCLA unrelated to whatever his father's spewing on Colin Coward's show. My opinion.
Okay. What do you think about him, Matt?
Yeah, I think he should just shut his mouth, if you want my honest opinion.
Yeah,
his son's a hell of a baller. And you know what? The kid's going to have a great NBA career. He's going to be a hard draft pick. Let his son shine in the spotlight and step back into the shadows.
You can't do that.
I'm not a fan. I understand what everybody's saying, but my thing with him is this. He's beating the NCAA at their own game, and they don't like it. And they have a problem with it. These athletes, they can't go out and market themselves or I hate to say pimp. They can't go out and market themselves or pimp themselves or make money off their services. But that doesn't mean that your father can't do it.
It's true.
And he's doing a good job of that. So I give him credit for that. He is sticking it to the NCAA, which is one of the most corrupt organizations in all of sports. Is he a loudmouth? Does he talk too much? Yes, I agree. I wouldn't really want to be one of his children. You know what I'm saying? I really probably wouldn't hang out with him. But I do understand and get what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, his kid, and perhaps kids, will be the stars.
Yeah.
So why shouldn't their family, him and I hope ultimately the sons, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Make the money off this. Why should the NCAA? Why should UCLA?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't disagree with
you. That part, I think, is genius.
It is. I mean, running his mouth, comparing him to Steph Curry and Michael Jordan, not great. But it's all hyperbole, and it's all about a brand. And if Lonzo Ball becomes an NBA superstar, great.
Yeah, there you go right there. So I understand, Matt, he's a loud mouth, and you wish he would just shut up. But if the method to his madness is sticking the NCAA at their own game, I don't have a problem with it.
No, I mean, I get what you're saying, but you know what? These kids should get something more, but you're also getting an education.
It's true, yep.
Or it's over like $100,000 now. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you have to weigh some things. And his son is in the spotlight. You know, like I'm saying, just step on the side.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, he's becoming a side
show. He's becoming more of the story than the
exactly.
son is.
Exactly. That's what's annoying me.
Yep. And I tell you, that game on Friday, that's going to be one of the ones that I'm really looking forward to this weekend at UCLA and Kentucky.
The South is stacked this weekend. UCLA, Kentucky, North Carolina, Butler.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, so that is the one region where all four top teams have advanced into Sweet 16.
Only one I did
that's why you did well.
It's
interesting. I only got one game wrong in that bracket, which is Middle Tennessee over Butler, ultimately. So that's going to be an awesome, awesome game. I think really the game that everyone has been looking forward to since this whole began was UCLA Kentucky. We all wanted that to happen. We all get it. The rematch from Lexington earlier this year, which UCLA went into Kentucky and won. And interesting note, UCLA has already beaten Kentucky this year. Kentucky has already beaten North Carolina this year. And of course, Butler's already beaten Villanova and a bunch of other Sweet 16s. So this region, which we said was a region of death, all four teams are in there. It's going to be a very, very fun Friday night out there in the South region.
Where are these games at?
These games are... Where are these games?
I look for you right now, Greg. I got you back. I
appreciate that. I know we have Madison Square Garden is the East. We got Kansas City's one of them. Where are these games? These games are in the South. Where is this, Corey?
I don't know. I can't find it all of a sudden.
You told me you had me.
Yeah, I know. I told you I had your back right there. And my bracket doesn't have the actual locations on it, so... Now I got to switch up over here, come over there, this and do that.
Yeah.
And then we look at that.
It's Memphis, Tennessee, FedEx Forum.
Memphis 10.
The FedEx Forum, home of the Grizzlies.
Yeah, home of the Grizzlies.
Yeah. So
Memphis.
John Calipari story.
John Calipari going back to Memphis. I believe it's the fifth time he'll be playing the Forum since he left Memphis all those years ago. All right, so final impressions for now. We'll get back to this a little bit later on about the tournament, about what you've seen. Good tournament. No buzzer beater yet. I mean, a couple opportunities, but no buzzer beater quite yet. Final impressions here?
I think Saturday and Sunday really made up for...
Thursday and Friday.
What was everybody was expecting to happen that didn't happen. But I really enjoyed the weekend. I mean, just in general, it got everything going. It was what we wanted to see. And there were some, you know, big-time teams going down.
Court?
Yeah, like you said, off to a slow start, then it picked up over the weekend, and I think we got some pretty good Sweet 16 matchups coming up that we can all look forward to. So I am in on this tournament. I feel good about it, and like you said, that South region, that bracket of death over there, it's going to be interesting to see how those two games play out on Friday night.
I'll tell
which
you
one what, is in the prime.
The main event is UCLA Kentucky.
Yeah, the main event.
We knew that
at 9:30. Where will we be?
9:40. We'll be here.
Oh no, yep, not me.
Me either.
I'll be done by then.
Same, as will I. I guess my biggest impression and my biggest takeaway here from the weekend is just, and this isn't anything we didn't already know, but just the parity in college basketball, particularly this year. There was no dominant team all year, and we knew that. And we always said like the bubble was very soft because like all these teams were so similar. And to me, you look no farther than the 1-8-9 game, right? Villanova fell. Gonzaga, which was up 21 over Northwestern. They needed a few lucky calls to go their way. A bad technical, a bad non-goaltending call.
By the way, I'm sorry to cut you off, but that little kid from Northwestern was annoying the hell out of me.
So you laugh, and we were both laughing about that, but that's a bigger story that I think we need to get into, to be honest with you, because that kid happened to be the athletic director's son. At Northwestern, and CBS really was kind of exploiting this 11-year-old kid, and you're like, "Oh, this is annoying the hell out of me." This is an 11-year-old kid that annoyed the hell out of you because he was emotional about his team. Like, I'm a 29-year-old kid that gets emotional about his team. Like, I feel like this poor kid. Like, we all pointed and we laughed. This is the athletic director's son that CBS exploited.
Yeah, he was definitely exploited, the kid, and it just, you know, look, it's Northwestern. They're just happy to be there, first time ever. It was great. They had a nice comeback, but I honestly, you know, didn't ever think that game was in danger.
It was in danger, man.
It got interesting, but
it got to five.
I just knew Gonzaga was.
I thought so too, but anyway, so that was a really good game. Of course, Carolina, Arkansas last night. Corey, you watched. It was a really good game. Very, very close. Like, all these teams could have fallen. The only one that blew them away was Kansas against Izzo.
Which was one we was looking for, it was going to be a good game. And then Tom Izzo, legend, just fell flat. But I tell you,
didn't have it this year.
Yeah, no, I tell you what, though. So many times we've seen Roy Williams take a timeout and North Carolina come out flat out the timeout. They came out that timeout, I think it was about, a little over 2 minutes left?
And 9-0 run.
And went on a 9-0 run to win that game. So,
nice job.
Roy's a great coach, but sometimes, you know, you kind of feel like Roy is losing it.
His zone last night was so stupid.
And then he always wears an ugly suit jacket from time to time.
Mike,
do a better job
And Mike
that.
Anderson's offense at the end was...
Yeah, what was
I
that?
Don't know what to do.
So out the timeout, he shot a ridiculous 3-point out the timeout, and I'm like, "What the hell is going on?"
So literally, I was watching with a buddy. I'm like, "Wow!" So he got his timeout, and the play is we dribble until there's 2 seconds on the shot clock and check up a three. Like, you are up six of the best team, one of the best teams in the country, and you fell apart.
You forgot the coach. Mm-hmm. You know, their last, I think, four times they've made it to the NCAA tournament, they've lost in the second round to North Carolina.
Really?
Yep.
It's crazy.
That's a tough draw.
Hey, I'm going to take a break. When we come back, I want to hear about Corey's weekend because he did something pretty interesting. We'll talk about that next here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. You hear it, the chimes, Undertaker's music for Duke. Blue Devils, down, forgotten, peace. I'm not upset about it.
Rest in peace, Blue Devils.
I don't think anybody's crying over Duke.
Nope.
You hear about Greg Marshall's wife at the Kentucky game? You remember this?
Mm-mm.
Greg Marshall, coach of Wichita State, his wife got like thrown out.
I like that.
She was like cursing, dropping F-bombs, drunk as hell, like out of her mind.
You know, a little bit later on today, I'm going to have the chance to myself and
talk to Greg Marshall's wife.
No. To talk to Jeff Erickson.
Okay.
And Jeff was at the was in that. You know, Jeff's a Northwestern guy.
That's right.
And he was at that. He went to those games out there in Salt Lake City over the weekend.
Very cool.
Interesting to talk a little baseball and some basketball with him.
Absolutely. And
Are you going to talk about your appearance in the WBC, hanging out next to Adam Jones, almost making that?
Hey, that's interesting. I don't know if you've seen the picture. It's a gentleman in a Yankee hat, trying to get to where Adam Jones was at and caught the ball and. Some people think he has a striking resemblance to the fantasy executive.
He really does.
I don't. I don't think so.
You didn't see?
I saw it.
Yeah. it is what it is.
We'll get to WBC in a little bit. But Corey.
Yo.
Over the weekend, I noticed you were an auctioneer.
Yeah, and this is about my fifth or sixth time doing it.
Fifth or sixth time being an auctioneer.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Now, Corey's not really known for his stamina. But
yeah, why would you say that?
Now,
I'm getting text messages right now, so I'm all right. Go ahead.
Now, I gotta ask. Like, the only time I've ever been an auctioneer is on radio.
Yeah.
And I did it for about a segment. Maybe a half hour.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be honest with you. It's fun for a little bit. Gets a little boring.
Yeah.
Like, you're just like, all right, $2 or whatever. And like, how do you do that for what, say 3 hours,
five.
Give or take? 5 hours.
Yeah.
How do you do that for five hours?
Five over the weekend. I got one coming up about 2 weeks from now. It's probably be about 9 hours and 19 team
okay.
leagues.
So how do you
jeez.
Like, does that get a boring to you?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you get paid for it? Honestly.
Well, Greg, I don't do nothing for free.
Okay, I'm being totally serious.
Yeah.
Like, all right, because like, to me, to go spend my time there for free for 5 hours or 9 hours, it gets a lot of time.
But no, it was.
But you get paid,
was,
I guess.
Yeah, you know, but still, even if so, it was a lot of cool people in the room. So definitely
right.
The money wasn't a prevailing issue. It was a lot of guys in the industry in that particular room. So we definitely had a good time going out there doing it. You know what I mean? Big shout out to Brian and his crew out there in Jersey. Good, solid draft with some experts and some good league mates. So it was a good time. It wasn't money motivated in that particular instance.
Sure.
But, I enjoy doing it. You know what I'm saying? I talk for a living.
No, I know you do. And I do too. That's why I loved doing it when we used to have the mock auction on the radio. It was fun. I enjoyed it. But I thought, like, after 4 hours and be like, you know what?
It's a little tedious after a while. You
all
start
right,
to push the pace, whatever.
You do push the pace at that point.
Once you get to that, people will start filling out their teams and you get to that, those dollar rounds and stuff.
Yeah, dollar
like
days
that.
Get up.
Yeah, you can be like going. You know what I'm saying? Nobody's really going to jump in and stuff like that. So did you get
bored at any point?
Huh?
Did you get bored?
No, I did not get bored at any point.
Did you get yelled at any point?
No.
Really?
No, I control.
Nobody steps up to the fantasy exec.
Well, yeah, hold on, Matt.
I think I do a good job. I'm available, you know.
You've been
at the fantasy exec on
Matt,
Twitter.
Matt, you've obviously been in live auctions before. Have you ever gotten frustrated at the auctioneer?
Yes. There was one 2 years ago in Vegas. Maybe he was kind of green, but this guy was terrible. And that really does.
But what makes him terrible, though? I've never done it, but like, why couldn't I just go into the room and be like, all right, you nominated Miguel Cabrera for 35. Do I hear 36? Do I hear 36? Going once, going twice. Boom.
No, you don't do that. You don't do it like that.
No, but you have to have, you have to set up before the auction starts. You got to have like a strong hand. Say, this is how it's going to go. Once I say this, it's over. And this guy got, you know, on more than one occasion, there was questions of who got the player, and that kind of, you know, this is kind of high stakes, and, you know, people were getting pissed off, put it that way.
No, but I want to dive further into this, because okay. I don't understand. What do you mean they don't know who got the player? If you bid $36, you get the player.
But somebody said, he said it, you missed him, and it gets, you know.
You got to kind of have a...
It's not an easy thing.
You have
thing,
to set
either.
The tone in the room, like, you know,
exactly.
kind of like, you know, like, you know, this is mine. I'm the quarterback here.
Right.
I'm driving the ship, whatever the case may be. Try to give everybody their own little opinions and stuff. Try to, you know, get in time when you want to get your bids in and stuff like that. I had somebody actually come to me before the auction and was like, listen, I don't bid till I hear going twice. So you kind of got to look out. You got to look out for those guys that are like that.
I'll talk about that in a sec. I hate those guys. Seriously. That's the biggest piece of crap ever. I'll get to that in 1 second.
Yeah, so, you know, sometimes you'll have dual bids come in, so, you know, you got to
So if you have dual bids, what are you, whoever voice you hear first?
If I got two 30s, my thing is anybody going 31? If nobody's going 31, then we flip a coin.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You don't be like, all right, this guy, I heard you first, not you.
I mean, that's the way it's played out a lot, too. But, I mean, Corey's right. It does get, you know, at times, it's like two guys coming in at once, but you have to set the tone. And
you can't let the room bully you.
Exactly.
Well, what specifically pissed you off about that auctioneer 2 years ago, Matt?
It's, you know what? Make a statement. Say, look, this guy, I heard this guy, it's his player. Don't let the room dictate it to you.
Okay.
And then you start second-guessing yourself.
Nobody.
And then everybody's pissed off.
I have the final call. Nobody in the room has the final call.
Exactly.
I have the final call because...
Right.
Once you tag lame, the game is follow the leader. So if one of the league makes see somebody else do it, then they'll think that they can do it too. And I'm really not here for that.
Okay, so basically, it sounds like the most important thing for both of you guys from an auctioneer is saying, listen, I made the call. Yeah. Whatever it is, right, ultimately right or wrong, I made the call. I heard this guy say it. And whatever this guy said over here, it's over.
You want to drives me batshit crazy in an auction?
Please.
There's a guy who's actually a really good auctioneer. But he'll be like, say a certain player. Say it was Daniel Murphy.
Well, yeah,
and it's like, Daniel Murphy for $18.
Right.
Going once. It's kind of low for like he'll make comments.
Yeah, yeah,
and I'm
see,
like,
no, the auctioneer
what are you
not
doing? Shut
have
your mouth.
No, the,
you
know, yeah. Not, the auctioneer is not there for commentary.
Right.
This is not, you're not supposed to editorialize the auction.
Yes.
You are supposed to in and out. It does not make, if you want to have a comment after the play is sold, that's fine. But there's no editorializing on players, on prices, anything like that. That's Bush League right there.
That is Bush League, Corey. That's Bush League. And it wasn't just me. It was some other players. This was in New York City.
It happened with us last year.
Yeah.
It happened with us last year.
You know what I'm talking about. Yep. He's actually good, but, you know.
I mean, I don't know the gentleman's name, and I'm not trying to call him out.
Keep the commentary to yourself.
You're
basically trying to, like, push up the bid on
exactly.
people.
Exactly.
What are you doing?
Yeah, you're not here. You're not playing in this league. You're helping us get through it. So I agree with that.
It's kind of like LeVar Ball. He's
yeah.
like, you know, step aside.
Yeah, we're not. It's not for the auctioneer's commentary. But Bryce Harper is not going to be sold for $1.
And, yeah, that's crazy.
And you have a lot of times. Bryce Harper for $5. Let's start at 35.
Let's go 25, at least $20. Like
yeah,
Mike Trout.
Yeah, exactly.
And let somebody jump it.
But is there some sort of strategy to it, right? Like you just told me, Corey, that there's this one guy that came up to you and said, listen, I don't bid until you say go in twice. Then you have someone that literally starts the Bryce Harper bidding at $5, but somebody else will start a bidding of a player at $25. Is there some strategy to doing that?
No, there isn't. Not on those type of players. If somebody says Mike Trout for a dollar, I'm instantly going 30 or 35.
Okay.
Just to like, you know, like, what are you doing?
Okay, but what about the other thing here, Matt? What about the guy that says, listen, I'm not bidding until you say go in twice? What is the point of that?
Oh, he's trying to get in at the last second.
Why?
I get that. That's just, I mean, I don't personally like to wait to the last second because sometimes, you know, whatever.
You never know.
If there's a guy I want, I mean, I'll throw a late bid in at times, which is fine. I mean, some people, that's their strategy.
But tell me, what is the strategy there?
I think they kind of feel like they're hearing that final price. They're getting in. If they like that player, they'll go the extra dollar and try and lock that in. And hopefully nobody's going to make a bid higher than theirs.
We had a situation during the flex football auction back in September.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of rubbed me the wrong way a little bit, but the auctioneer was a real cool guy that everybody in the industry loved, so I didn't say anything. Then it was a situation with me and Jake on Allen Hearns down the stretch. So you get into these little tight situations and stuff like that, but like, the auctioneer is very important. I remember the situation that happened with the flex.
What happened?
Half the room thought the player being bid on was Alshon Jeffrey. When the player was sold, it was Mike Evans. And
That's crazy.
How is that possible?
I would have been in on Mike Evans.
How is that possible?
I don't know.
Was it you say Alshon Jeffrey going once, Alshon Jeffrey going twice?
And then, no, so it was like, so somebody called Mike Evans. The auctioneer is like, okay, so we got Jeffrey going once. And then the player was like, and then when it was sold, it was like, that wasn't Jeffrey, that was Mike Evans. And I'm like, oh, Mike Evans just, wait a minute, Mike Evans just went for $18?
Yeah, that should have been redone. I mean, that's like a step in my office kind of moment.
You know what I mean? You got situations like that. And also, you know, the league owners, they have to get in there at, you know, it all comes back to being able to push the auctioneer around. And anybody that's in the auction this upcoming weekend, if you got to feel like you can push the auctioneer around, I would do it.
Yeah, I have one Friday, 4 o'clock, and, you know, I am amped and ready to go on it. But, you know, when you deal with a good auctioneer and you're playing with a smart room, things should go smoothly for the most part, but it's like life, nothing's perfect.
Now, when you say push him around, you should do it, what does that mean? How do you
feel as if you can get an advantage on an auctioneer and try to get a player or try to get a call to go your way, go for it. Or create some kind of controversy, go for it.
Let's take a break here. Let's dive into that. Taking advantage, the tricks of the trade in the auction, because I don't know what they are. Like, to me, I'll explain this on the other side of the break. I'll explain my auction, quote-unquote, strategy on the other side. It's Roto Experts in the Morning here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. So I participate in football auctions. And in all honesty, they're online auctions. We can't all get in the same room at the same time because we're spread across the country. And I sit there and we all argue in the room that we hate people that put in their bids 1 second left on the clock. Put in a bid. And we're just like, why? I get it. Like, I've tried to, and I am certainly guilty of it from time to time. And when they ask me why, I was like, that's what I like to do. That's not a real answer. Like, I'm not sure what strategy that provides
it's
you.
It's gamesmanship.
Right. Well, it's being an a-hole is what it is.
there's always two ways to look at things.
And I'm saying for someone who's done it. Like, all right, it's one thing if I'm, like, really deciding and I'm taking my last few seconds, like, all right, do I really want to go the extra dollar on this guy? That's fine, right? Like, if you do it, it happens. But if I'm doing it every single time and pissing people off, I don't think you'll see what I'm accomplishing. And I don't see what I'm accomplishing when I take, and it's the same type of thing, when you're in a live auction, I believe, and I'm not going to bid until Corey says going twice. It may be gamesmanship and pissing people off, but I don't get it. I don't get it when, Corey, you just tell me that, like, if I could take advantage of an auctioneer, I'm going to. I don't know how that helps me. Like, well, my thought process, I'm going to go to an auction to get the player I want. How does it help me to take advantage of the auctioneer? What does that mean?
Well, I think maybe that player is thinking, if he waits on it, he's going to get that guy. Nobody's going to go that extra buck. So he's trying to get that last second steal, in his opinion. That's my philosophy. I'm more aggressive. I want that guy. If I have to, I'll even jump guys like $2 instead of $1, you know, if that's the guy that I want. I mean, I have a strategy. I have a philosophy. I'm aggressive.
Yeah, you know. That's the most important thing as far as being in the room as somebody in the league. Hit the nail on the head. That word, that A word, aggressive. You have to be aggressive. You cannot come into these situations timid or passive. So if you know what I'm saying, if I can get in on the player last minute and I'm doing my math and say, oh, this is the guy I want, and it's like going, and I'm like, no, I'm in. Sometimes you can tell if the auctioneer is timid. He'd be like, okay, he'll take that bid. You know, and things like that. So
okay.
It's just a way to have if I see a timid auctioneer, I know in the back of my mind at some point I'm going to push him to see where he goes.
Well, how would you push him?
Just like I said, I'll jump in after the bell and force the player to go back on the clock.
Interesting. Even if you don't want that player?
No. It would have to be a player I'm in on.
All right. You're not just messing and messing.
Yeah, I'm not just messing.
You're messing with a guy that you could want.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, some people like to try and bid people up, but you have to be paying attention to, you know.
Yeah, what's going on.
First off, your team needs. Does that guy need that player? I mean, at some point, you have to, you know. You always got to be kind of like a shark always moving. You have to be able to audible on the fly. You're the quarterback of your team. You got to make the right decisions. You got to put yourself in the best position.
You should also come in prepared, knowing exactly how much you're going to do. I don't know how Matt does it, but my guess is, well, see, I'm from like the Lenny Melnick school, where you put your team down exactly what you want on paper prior to going in there, and you have some alternate guys and stuff like that in case you got to adjust. But Matt, do you? My guess is, experienced player like you, you budget a certain amount of your 260 for batters, and you budget a certain amount for pitchers, and you know what your targets are depending on how the room is going.
Yes, that's pretty much what I do. I'm more of on the fly guy that I will make the changes necessary. I want to see how the room is going early. You know, what are the big time players going? Are people being timid? Are people being aggressive? One of the reasons I like to get an ace early, I kind of find you get some of the best values there. Like Jake Arrieta was going for, say, I think he went for like $26, $27 last year. And he was one of the top rated pitchers. And that was a steal, considering if you wait, like in my super auction, we waited and we wanted to pay it up for Cole Hamels. and that was our race, and I wasn't too happy about that.
Certainly not. Certainly not. I think auction strategies obviously are very, I don't want to say invalid, but they vary. But to me, it's more about the players that, like, I've constantly tried to discover a real strategy to play it,
mm-hmm.
and I haven't figured it out yet. And maybe Matt, who's doing, there's a million of these things, you have a strategy that works, or maybe it's just per auction. I don't know, but
it kind of varies from auction to auction. Just to be honest with you, I mean, you have to have, you know, a philosophy, yes, a game plan, yes. You know, I don't want to say these old things. I always hear these are living, breathing organisms and crap like that. You know, you got to go in there. You have a game plan. But you're the quarterback that has to audible whenever necessary. And that's the way it is. And I think they're fun. Do you want to be in the end game holding all the money and paying up for, like,
schmucks,
starting pitchers that, yeah. you know, you're paying $13 for that should have went for half that?
Yeah. No, you got to go out and you got to be aggressive and go get your guys early and adjust on the back end. It's, you know, you don't want to walk away from an auction table with $17, $18 left because you might as well not play it.
Yeah, that's never happened to me. I've never left money on the table. I might be sitting around for a while, but I've never left money on the table.
I'm here, but I'm at zero.
Now, Corey, do you, as an auctioneer, do you take notice of people that have a lot of money left? Do you, like, all right, I know Matt's going to bid because he's got a ton of money left.
As we go through and we take the breaks and we do the money check, you kind of know who has the hammer.
Okay.
So I know at some point I'm going to focus on that side of the room.
Right.
Well, you know, he'll be in my eyesight because I know he's going to be more actively bidding.
And let me say one thing. I know everybody always talks about, you know, throw players out that you don't want early, that people are going to spend their money. But don't just always do that. I think one of the things I like to do too, maybe the first time I'll throw a guy out that I just want to get some money off the board. But that second time, I'm probably going to maybe throw somebody out that I want. I want to see if I can get that guy because that might change my strategy. If I know I missed on him, I have another guy that, look, I have to get that guy next time or something similar to that.
I agree with that. When, like, I do a lot of the football ones. When I'm in the football auction, the first name I throw out is always going to be Rob Gronkowski
mm-hmm.
because he's never going to be on my team. So I do like to throw out other players and get money off the table. But at some point, I'm like, okay, I know for the flex auction, when I saw how the money was falling on the wide receivers, on the big wide receivers like the Odells and the Julios, I think to myself, you know what? I think I might be able to sneak in and get T.Y. Hilton right here. So while they were going in the $50 range, high 40s, early $50 range, I snuck in and got T.Y. Hilton for $24. But, you know, you kind of got to know where the tear break is and where that drop is. So it takes a lot of... In order to be good at them, it takes a lot of time and preparation and study prior to the auction because once you get it all sounds good when you're on your laptop and you're doing it and you're putting it together, but you don't know where it's at until you get into the room.
Yeah, I always add a couple of dollars to each player heading into the live auctions. Like this weekend, if say Syndergaard's average auction value has been $30. I'm going to say he's going to probably go for 32, possibly 33. I have to know that ahead of time. Am I willing to spend 32, 33 in him? That's another question I'm going to ask myself. Who's my backup option?
That's also important to have backup options.
Yeah, never put yourself in a position, whether it's a draft or an auction, where your guy goes and you're like, you got to be, you are the general. You got to have a game plan.
And you got to be able to change that game plan on the fly.
Yes.
That's extremely important. In your role as auctioneer, Corey, now Matt, have you ever been an auctioneer?
That I have not.
Okay. Corey, in your role as an auctioneer, how much do you charge? Is that an off the air conversation?
That's a private business discussion with the fantasy exec.
I didn't know this was a controversial question.
Never make the first offer.
I didn't know this was a controversial question.
Not a controversial question.
If I wanted to book you for an auction, I wanted to know how much it costs.
You can hit me up on Twitter at the fantasy exec.
Yeah. And then he'll direct message you because he doesn't want
to
business.
I'm not coming to take your leagues. You know, I'm not coming for heads in your leagues. Put it like that.
Okay.
It will definitely be an enjoyable experience.
Per
player.
As an auctioneer, is it your job to do anything but call out the players' names? Do you have to worry about anything else? Like, budgets, making sure somebody hasn't been too much money. Like,
no, that's the commissioner.
The commissioner does that.
The commissioner will take care of the financials. You know what I mean? And the roster and stuff like that. They'll go through. They'll do money checks. The only thing is, I just don't stop me in the middle of a round. We get to the end of the round. It's time to break. Time to stand down. Trying to do money. That's fine. You know what I'm saying? But just get through the end of the round and then just keep pushing it. I let them know when the pace is about to quicken and stuff like that. So that's how the fantasy exec role. I am available. I have a few more spots open between now and our opening day.
All right. Now we take a break. When we come back, we got to wrap up our auction strategic discussion right after this. We're back here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. And Corey kind of just dropped the hammer here. That as an auctioneer, like, his ultimate goal, can you say this out loud? His ultimate goal is to actually be the auctioneer at Tout Wars.
Yeah.
Like, not, like, of course, be in Tout Wars, which I don't know if you heard that.
I'm already in it.
Yeah.
That part is
word on the street has gotten to me.
That we already accomplished.
I heard
part.
He's coming for a guy named Ronis or something like that.
Yeah, Ronis. Two-time fraud.
So that was the number one thing, obviously. And now you want to be the auctioneer for Tower Wars.
Thought it'd be cool. You know, that is the fantasy. That is the most premier, prestigious fantasy sports league. So it'd be cool to quarterback that. You know what I'm saying? With some of the big names in the room and stuff like that. So not this year. It'll happen soon, though.
You should talk to Jeff Erickson about that. Jeff does a great job doing the Tout Wars mixed auction every year.
Yes, he does.
He's got the nice fast pace. You know,
mm-hmm. He does. He does an excellent job. I've been in the room with Jeff. He does a good job at that. So you know, I've took some tricks of the trade from Jeff, to be honest.
Like what?
Just little things, nothing particular, nothing I can, you know, say to point to particularly, but I think he does a good job. And what's the other homie's name?
Brian's another guy.
Brian Walton, right?
Not Brian Walton.
No, Brian Walton's the man from St. Louis. Yeah, that's the Cardinals guy.
I forget Brian's last name. He's very good too, and he's got some humor in himself. Yeah, you know, he makes the room laugh at times. Yeah, you know, lightens exactly. things up.
I think that's important too.
He's excellent as well.
Yeah.
Good call there, Corey.
After paying the auctioneer whatever it costs, do you tip an auctioneer at the end?
No. The that's enough. I'm not. You don't have to. I don't have to double dip.
Unless there's a champagne room.
This is for you, auctioneer. Thank you, gentlemen. Close the door.
So no. There's no tips.
No, uh-uh.
Do you get fed?
Oh yeah, they look out. Like, you eat, you drink, eat good, drink good. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Now, have you ever been a drunk auctioneer?
No. That's not professional, Greg. I may have one or two. I'm not going to get drunk.
I understand.
I get drunk after the draft.
You get drunk after
the draft? Yeah, after the draft. When I got back uptown the other night, I felt good.
Right. But I'm just saying, if you ever, like, you know, got drunk, just wondering.
Before?
No.
I'm about to say, I've been getting drunk since I was in college.
I understand that.
You know, we used to drink St. Ives back in those
sipping
days.
Sipping on gin and juice?
Yeah. We used to drink St. Ives. You ever drank St. Ives, Matt?
Not the St. Ives. The, what was it? The malt liquor, Colt 45.
Oh, you drank Colt 45, yeah.
That was the high school drink of choice.
Yeah.
Mad Dog 2020 as well.
Yeah, those are, you know, when you, let me tell you something about malt liquor. When you wake up and you're 21 and you're like, I'm never going to drink that again. At 21, it's like, yeah, that's something that people shouldn't be drinking.
Let's go to the phone lines at 844-843-6879. Let's go to Bob in Cleveland. Bob, good morning.
Oh, Bob in Cleveland. What up?
What up, Bob?
Good morning, man. Thanks
good morning,
for taking
man.
My call.
Absolutely,
for
Bob. How are you?
Again. Yeah, Bob, what's up with you? Right. We always talk around this time of year because what round are you in?
I'm in 15.
All right, you're in the 15th. Good.
I called Scott the other day. They gave me some good information. Hey, real quick, I want to make a point about South Carolina. Corey said he thought they were pretty good a couple years back. I think it was 1997. They were ranked second, I think, in the East, and they went to Pittsburgh, and they lost to that Coppin State with Fang Mitchell, but they were a second seed. Everybody thought they were going to go far in that tournament, and that was a 15 seed beat a 2 seed, and that was South Carolina. That might have been their best game.
Was Henry Bibby the coach then?
No. For South Carolina, I'm not sure.
No, no, sorry. Harry Bibby called. But... Harry coach. You, the other USC. He coached Southern Cal, not South Carolina.
Let's Brian Bob hang out because yeah. we got to get to his question.
We're up against one.
Yep.
Yeah, we're up against one. Bob, hang out. We'll get to your question on the other side because next hour we got a whole bunch of spring training headlines to get to. We got some WBC thoughts we want to get to as well. So good strategy hour. Now let's get to the facts. That comes your way here in hour number two on the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
In the beginning, there was darkness. Then, out of the void, came fire, smoke, Roto. Fantasy excellence begins here.
This is your time.
The Roto Experts in the Morning starts now.
Number two underway. Roto Experts in the Morning, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We were just chatting with Bob in Cleveland. He's in round 15 of his draft. He gave us a note on South Carolina that we were up against the break. So let's bring back Bob. And Bob, how are you, my man?
Yeah.
Good.
Hey, Bob, Melvin Watson and B.J. Mackey were on that 1997 South Carolina team. Those were the players I couldn't remember.
Hey, Bob, real quick, is this a 12 or a 15-teamer?
12.
Okay.
12-team fantasy points. All fantasy points across the board. You lose a point for a strikeout on the batter. All right, here we go. That's slim pickings here, man, and I got a hodgepodge of players. I like all these guys. I'm going to see what you got. There's seven guys here. Vince Velasquez, Mike Fultonevich, Ivan Nova, Cam Bedrosian, Victor Martinez, Wilson Ramos, that's the guy from the catcher from Tampa, and the last one is Eduardo Nunez. Anybody stand out? Like I said, slim pickings here, 15th round.
Yeah, you know what, Bob? I think, you know, if I need saves, I'm going Cam Bedrosian. If I need the hitter, the first guy that's going to pop to me is Victor Martinez in this kind of a format. The guy can still get it done. I know he's older, got the bad knees, but the dude can rake. Otherwise, it's Eduardo Nunez if I need to get some speed involved there. But those are the top three guys right there popping off. If I needed to go with a starter, then it's Ivan Nova.
For me,
Ivan Nova, good.
So for me here, if you need the saves, you don't have a closer yet. I think Cam Bedrosian is no question the pick. I think Houston Street's going to start the season on the DL, which means Bedrosian is going to get the opportunity. So if you don't have a closer yet and you're looking for one, Bedrosian's the guy. So I totally agree with Matt there. When it comes to picking a starter, I'm between two. Ivan Nova's one of them. I think with Ray Searage in Pittsburgh for a full season, that whole deal, there's a lot to like about Nova. But I also like Vinny Velasquez. I think Vince had a really good year last year. Obviously, he has strikeout potential. It's can he stay healthy? Now, we're going to talk about Jared Eichhoff in a little bit, and I know that Matt likes Eichhoff more so than both Velasquez and Aaron Nola, in fact. But there's a lot to like about Velasquez. They'll get you more strikeouts, theoretically, if he can stay healthy and pitch a full season, more than Nova. So I lean Velasquez more than Nova, but if you want saves, I go Cam Bedrosian.
Yeah, and I'm on board.
All right,
Go ahead. I'm on board with Nova and Cam, and then E5 if the hitting is what's there.
Good. Thank you, man. Good information. I'll call you in a day or two.
Appreciate it, Bob.
All right, thanks, Bob.
Now,
Bob must be in the military because he's like, when he comes on, he goes, "Good morning, man."
I like that.
That's like a military
thing. It makes me feel like a sir.
Yeah. You feel like you're about to go to, you know, battle.
It's kind of like when you shake somebody's hand, you want a firm grip,
you want
to look you right in the eye.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, I'm suspect of you.
Yeah. I agree with you. We just mentioned Vinny Velasquez, of course. Now,
something happened with him this weekend?
Jared Eichhoff once again looked really, really good. And Modiga's been kind of all over him, at least to me, about what he thinks of him. He likes him pretty much more than any of the Philly starters, especially where you're getting him. Corey, are you in on Jared Eichhoff?
Yeah, I'm in on Jared Eichhoff. I was looking at him earlier in draft season. I think if I do one more league, he's a player that I'll be interested in scooping up and be in on. A lot of I think that Philly staff rotation, whatever Scott wants me to call it, I think they have some hidden gems on there. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I like Eichhoff though.
Is Eichhoff, Modiga, a guy that you're seeing climb?
Yeah, I think he's starting to move up. I was looking to grab him last night. I wasn't able to. But the reason that I really like about him is he's the guy that could give you the 200 innings now. He's in line for that. And I think we can see that next step forward. I got really excited. I believe it was Eno Saris, you know, the pitching guru himself. I think he was saying something about the slider and kind of like a Corey Kluber-esque, if everything went right, possible breakout. But without even that, I want the guy that's going to give me the innings at the point where he's going. He's a great value. I mean, if you told me Aaron Nola was going to give me 200 innings, then sure, I'm all over him. Velasquez, I think the talent is immense. I'm just a little concerned with his arm, if he can be the starting pitcher. Maybe he ends up being a lockdown closer down the road. You know, I'm not sure. But it's not that I don't like the talent. I'm looking for 2017 and where I'm going to get the best value. And I got a guy who's primed for 200 innings.
And that, a lot of times, half the battle. But to me, if you can guarantee me that 150 innings, let's say, which is 50 innings less, like, why can't I, Modica, worry about September in September? Like, we're always looking for 200 innings. And, like, you're somebody, I think, that's been on Julio Urias, and like, you think he's going to be awesome. He's not going to start in April. He's not giving you 200 innings. He's not going to start the season with the major league team. He's going to stay back in wherever they are, Venice Beach. They're going to hang out there, do his thing. And, you know, May 1st, they'll come around. That's not 200 innings. But you love this guy.
You know, I mean, like, Julio Urias, Lance McCullers types, I'm all fine with taking them.
But you know you're not getting 200 innings.
No, I don't have a problem taking them. It's all about how am I setting up my rotation. That's why having that foundation, it's like, you know, you build a house. You want that strong foundation. It allows you to take these guys, and then there's guys later on that I definitely want to fill in, like a Matt Shoemaker. That's why Jared Eichhoff is attractive. I mean, hell, I don't personally like John Lackey, but it's hard not to like him on your fantasy team, you know, as somebody that's going to give you those innings. He's on a great team. So, you know, it's look, I like everybody. Everybody wants to get those up-and-coming studs and say, I had him. Forget that. You know, build it right. You know, you can take the chances when the opportunity is there, as long as you have that. That's why a guy like Julio Teheran is a guy that gets overlooked and passed on a lot, but is a guy that should be taken.
So basically you're saying you're fine with taking a guy or two that's the 140, 150 guy, but you need to be able to back that up with one of these, maybe not a sexy guys, that's going to give you 200 innings. Is that fair to say?
That's exactly. Just to give a quick, for instance, last night I was in a 15-team, 50-round draft that never ended, when 6 hours long. I think the final pick was at 2 a.m.
Modiga hasn't slept yet, by the way.
But 3 hours and I'm charged. This is how I did my rotation. I waited to the fifth round, something I rarely do, but there were some pitchers there I thought I could get. I got Kyle Hendricks, who was key to my start. I think he's secure. I think he's ready for the 200-inning plateau. Then I went Garrett Cole, Rich Hill, Jameson Taillon. I did
want... Well, let's stop there. Rich Hill's... I don't want to say you can pencil Rich Hill for 200 innings, because that's not going to happen.
No, not at all.
Okay. So you got Hendricks, you got Cole, which you're expecting 200 innings from both of those guys, I would say.
At least I'm looking for 180 from Cole.
Yeah. Okay. You're looking for a lot of innings from both of those guys. So you take your first, I don't want to say shot, but your first expectation that, all right, I'm going to get a good pitcher here with Rich Hill, but I'm not expecting 200 innings.
Not at all. And that's why, like, after, when I was looking for my number five guy, I definitely wanted to fill in like Eichhoff and like a Matt Shoemaker type, because those are guys I really like. I think I'm going to get the innings from them. They have some upside going late. So I knew I was taking chances. Look, Garrett Cole is still a risk, but Garrett Cole is looking damn good in the spring, and he's a guy that I'm very high on. He's a top 20 pitcher for me. I think I have him 19th. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I wind up taking a risk because I waited. I'm trying to make the – trying to show, like, if I would have went heavy pitching, maybe if I got two guys earlier, I have a much better foundation to take the risk. It's a little risky, but I'm all in on this staff, and I do kind of like it.
Okay. So – that gets me to the other big news from the weekend. Because, I mean, Jared Eichel wasn't really big news. It was news, but, like, it wasn't the story. The story is, you heard it at the top of Scott's news update at the top of the hour, it is JD Martinez.
Oh, no.
JD Martinez has a mid-foot sprain, and the Tigers have said they're not making an announcement until we get the second MRI back. Corey, that sounds terrible.
No, exactly. What is this that they know that they're keeping from us that they don't want to go public with? He's on my Tout Wars team. I don't know if you guys heard about this. So, this is going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Obviously, he's going for that second opinion. Listen, the foot sprain, I think you start to think Lisfranc. At least
yeah,
I do.
That's what I'm thinking.
That's exactly what I'm thinking, too.
You start to think Lisfranc, and that's something that, what is that? That's a six. That can be a couple months, right?
Yeah, I mean, it depends how badly it is, right? Like how
I
badly
think six weeks is. If it is Lisfranc, I think six weeks. Excuse me, is kind of the starting point, and then maybe you go up to maybe even 3 months or something like that. So it can, you know, be a crippling injury, especially for a guy who plays in the outfield. Hopefully they're like, oh, look, we made a mistake. It's only like, you know, a hangnail.
Yeah, the problem here is with J.D. Martinez, I love the player, but if you only got 1 foot, the only guy I'm taking top 50 is Daniel Day-Lewis from my left foot, because, I mean, you really can't do it's really going to be something that's going to hinder him. I mean, this is possibly a severe injury to a very good player.
Yeah, I mean, a contract year player, a guy that we talked about on Friday, just how much power that he has, and that he almost created his own luck. The bat didn't matter because of how hard he's been hitting the ball. We literally just talked about him. And now to see him go down, it's a massive blow to the Tigers, who also have to deal with Miguel Cabrera's back injury now. We just heard Bob ask about Victor Martinez. He's going to have to step up. Justin Upton's going to have to step up. This is a massive blow. Your 50-round draft was last night. Did J.D. Martinez take a drop?
J.D. Martinez went 49th overall, which for me was too rich until I hear this news. I got Gregory Polanco 4 picks later, and I was ecstatic
much more
about that.
Much more comfortable with that. Yeah,
did I try to trade him this morning?
I don't think anybody's going to be buying. Yeah. I understand you what you're doing.
These touts are pretty smart guys, so I hear.
You're trying to sell on rumor.
I hear Adam Ronis may be interested in J.D. Martinez. You took him in the third round? Or the fourth?
I took him in the third round.
He was a third round player. Yeah. I mean, I have no problem with Corey took him. And like I said, I was excited for him, too. He was really, like you said, walk year and stuff. And it really is a shame. I mean, these are the things. I mean, luckily for, like, the people playing in Tout this weekend and the NFBC high stakes, you know, at least you'll know heading into the weekend.
Yeah, I didn't have that opportunity.
Yeah, no. That's the pitfalls.
No, it's all good, yeah, drafting early.
You get some discounts.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know,
so, you know,
it's sometimes, you know.
It's a part of it, you know what I mean? So we're here to help you figure it out.
How about this, Corey? Sometimes you're the bug, sometimes you're the windshield.
There you go,
that's
right.
That's just life.
Sometimes you're the bug.
Sometimes you're the bug.
Splat. There you go.
I just splatted.
I look to see what's on my bench. See how, because I'm already looking to see how I'm gonna fix this out.
There are a ton of great pitching performances over the weekend from some bigger name players. Is that making you drive them up the draft board? We find out next here on the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We are now just 2 weeks away from opening day. Literally 2 weeks away. We are here, gentlemen. Very, very exciting stuff.
Yep.
And we're also 2 weeks away from WrestleMania, by the way.
Oh, how about that? WrestleMania, 2 weeks opening away. Day.
Same day.
Opening day is Monday or Sunday to you?
It's Monday, but hell, I mean, I don't got a problem with Sunday.
I don't think it's Monday because it's not one game on Sunday anymore. There's three.
Yeah, no,
so that's opening day.
And it's a day game.
And they're the Yankees.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's that thing about Monday. It's like, you know, everybody should, you know, be in school, but you have your kids take off, you go to the ballpark. I mean, that's like also kind of kicks off the grilling season for me. when I had a barbecue. But, you know.
What happened to your poor barbecue?
Well, the now I'm in an apartment now, in the city. And,
you want to burn the place down.
So one of my buddies live on the Upper East Side. I was able to get a barbecue for his, like, outside portion.
Well, I'm not living in the High Castle on the Upper East Side.
Yeah,
but,
neither
am
I. I'd like to buy a barbecue and, like, bring it, like, outside the front door.
They do that uptown sometimes.
Do they?
Yeah, but that's too ratchet for me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That'd be cool. I like barbecuing. It's fun. Anyway, some of the big pitching performances here from over the weekend. Let's start with the guy you drafted last night. We just mentioned him, Matt, and that's Garrett Cole.
I just saw something crazy just now. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Is it about Garrett Cole?
No, it's Albert Breer just tweeted something ridiculous, but go ahead.
Okay.
Garrett Cole.
All right. Garrett Cole performing very, very well this spring. You have him, as you said, number 19. Is that
that's correct?
That's right. He's number 19. Now, the questions about Garrett Cole were both injury related. He's both inconsistency related. He's had bouts with both of them. But Garrett Cole, to me, he's number 19 for you, still has, and maybe this is just the, I guess, history of Garrett Cole where he was drafted and that kind of stuff. He still has the ability to, like, to me, pop off as an ace. Like, if I draft him, like, I think there's a chance I'm going to get a pitcher at number 19 overall, let's say, and that could be an ace. Do you feel that way?
Absolutely feel that way. I mean, there is some risk here, but I couldn't pass him up. I was going off my board. I do like the pick there. And, you know, maybe I was hoping like a Julio Teheran would have fell the next round to me. Unfortunately, that didn't. I was looking at guys like Danny Duffy, but he went ahead. So, I Garrett Cole to me is pretty much looking damn good in the spring. And there's a lot of guys that are coming off injuries or had suspect second halves or flaws I can find. I'm going to take the guy with the pedigree. I'm going to take the guy that's hitting 95, 96, pitching in PNC Park, and a guy we were all in love with heading into last season.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. A little bit of a bounce back. But I do feel like, Corey, it's not like you're getting really Garrett Cole much of a discount. I feel like most people are in on the revival of Garrett Cole.
I think
Cole
he's
here.
A player that's starting to rise up draft for us now. Obviously, he's a dude that got ace stuff. Injuries have been something that he struggled with. Listen, not really too much during the spring, but we saw how he looked against the DR, and then he's the opening day starter. Great staff out there, the pitching whisperer in Ray Sarich. So he's a player that's going up now. 19th is the highest I've seen him ranked.
I mean,
who do you have him above certain players that other people don't?
I mean, I got him 19th. I think Duffy's like 28.
They'd much rather have Garrett Cole than Danny Duffy, for the record.
Yeah, I mean, but I do think Danny Duffy has a possibility of really shining this year. I'm probably the highest on James Paxton. I have him like 21. Julio Teheran's number 22. Quintana's 23. So guys, Kenta Maeda 24. So, I mean, it was in that range. I went with the highest upside there. Getting Kyle Hendricks, who I think is a secure pitcher. I'm not worried about him not pitching 200 innings. He's on a great team. So I got at least that base. And to me, you know, I went with the National League guy too.
You got over guys like Porcello and...
I mean, Porcello was a guy that I was looking a couple of rounds later. I mean, Garrett Cole was originally going in, say, like the eighth round. But I bumped him up. I went off my board. I mean, Kenta Masahiro Tanaka.
Hello.
I love you. Hello. Hello. I love Tanaka. He went in the fifth round. You know, so this draft was a little crazy, too. I mean, there were picks like John Gray. I'm probably the biggest John Gray guy out there. He went in the seventh round. I don't know if I'm taking John Gray in the seventh round. And I'm super high on him, but, you know.
Yeah, Garrett Cole, according to NFBC ADP, 27th. Corey mentioned with Porcello's down there. All the guys you mentioned, which actually really surprised me, Matt. Quintana, Teheran, Duffy, Maeda, all those guys above him in the NFBC ADP. And I think he should be above them all of them. Like, around 19, like, makes sense for me.
It's starting to change. Like, one thing, like, if you play in the NFBC, you don't look at the overall ADP anymore. If you're playing now, you got to go to March 1st. You got to see
Atlantic
the trends.
Data.
Yeah, you got to see the trends that's happening. Because what always happens is pitching gets pushed up.
Speaking of trends, what about Garrett Cole's teammate, Tony Watson? Because Tony Watson As good as Cole has looked, that's how bad Tony Watson's looked. And I know you've really been pushing the Juan Nicasio train as a potential closer for Pittsburgh. Most other people are not. They're all in on Daniel Hudson as a potential closer in Pittsburgh. But Tony Watson, very, very bad spring. But, you know, Clint Hurdle has not said anything that Hudson has a shot or Nicasio has a shot. He said Tony Watson's my guy. How worried are we about him?
He's a guy I haven't drafted all preseason. I've been very negative about him. I've been shorting him from the start. I said I want no part of Tony Watson. It'll probably be Daniel Hudson. Hudson's got some talent, too. But I think Nicasio is the guy to watch out. I mean, once he was... He showed how good he is in the role last season once put into the bullpen. I mean, he led all relievers post-All-Star break, 63 strikeouts. He was a guy last spring we were all high on. He's not a starting pitcher. You don't want him going through the lineup multiple times. So, I mean, Tony Watt, there are guys I won't draft. I'd rather wait on a closer. I'd rather have Sean Kelly than Tony Watson.
Wow.
That's a great point. So I was going to talk about this a little later. Bring it up now. You said you'd rather have Sean Kelly than Tony Watson. The fact is, the Nationals have, number one, not announced the closer. Number two, John Heyman on Friday in his Inside Baseball column basically said Sean Kelly's not the closer. Sean Kelly's going to be the eighth inning guy. They don't trust him two Tommy John surgeries. They don't think he can hold up as the ninth inning guy. They're starting him in the eighth. Knowing that, are you still taking Sean Kelly?
Yeah, you know what? Because there's Blake Treinen there and
Coder Glover.
Yeah. Everybody.
Joe Blanton.
Joe Blanton is the sneaky guy.
I agree.
He pitched excellent last season. Everybody remembers how he got blown up in the NL Championship Series versus the Cubs. But his season was pretty damn good.
Let me ask you this, Matt. First, let's say, I don't know, first when we hit that after opening day and we hit that first wave of run. And you got guys like Blanton, probably not Glover. You got guys like Blanton and Nathan on the wire. It's not time to empty the clip already, is it?
Well, I mean, Joe Nathan, I'm just not emptying the clip on him. He's just too old. I mean, I've seen some smart players in Fab, like that first week or two. I've seen them bid like 30-40% on guys that were like retreads.
I don't know. I'm so nervous.
That's why, come this weekend, you got to grab yourself, if not in the first tier of closers, in that second tier. I mean, Edwin Diaz is kind of up there. I want at least an O, a Diaz. I had to settle on Ken Giles last night, I really love Ken Giles. But the friggin' Houston manager is like, he just scares the crap out of me.
It's fine.
He really always says, Ken Giles should get the most of the saves. It's like, look, you got a guy who's a beast. Just let him go.
That going early, that going all in early on Fab is so risky to me. I've only seen it work one time, and it was, I know guys that went 80-90% on, to my football, and went 80-90% on Julius Thomas after he had that first big blow-up game with Peyton Manning a few years ago. Other than that, I have never seen empty the clip Fab early in the season work. I think it's a bad idea.
I agree with you. I think the trick is getting that closer in waiting. Picking the guy that you pick up, say, 2 weeks before. You got to be watching, try and watch as many games. A key thing to do if you're playing season-long fantasy or pretty much any kind of fantasy, you got to be looking at box scores. Box scores, check them down every day, do a rundown on that. And like I said, I think that's the key, is you got to take the shots on guys you think have the best chance. And it's only going to cost you a few dollars as opposed to $300-$400.
So when it comes down to the closer, I'll take a stab at the end of the draft for one of these Nationals guys. It's not going to be Sean Kelly, ultimately. Like, I kind of like this Coder Glover thing. Like, I'm kind of buying that, the Blake Treinen thing. And because I want a Nationals guy, I want the guy. So in that one of those last rounds, I'm going to take a stab because I don't have to wait. I don't have to blow my Fab budget on this yet. I can just take a stab in the last round where I'm taking a stab anyway, and maybe I'm getting a top closer.
Yeah, I mean, the guy I want to see the Nationals get, and I think, I know he's under control, but an Alex Colome, who basically last night my decision was between Giles or Colome. I really like them both. I'm a big Giles guy, so I was like, you know what? I'm going with my boy here. But Alex Colome on the Nationals. Look, Dusty Baker is old school. We all know that, right? So he's going to go more with a veteran-type guy, in my opinion. I don't think Coda Glover is getting the shot out of the gate. Could he usurp him at some point? Yes. Joe Blanton, I don't think they're going to start with him either. I think Kelly is going to get that first shot.
I really don't. But there is one thing I feel strongly about.
You think Hyman is that connected?
Yes, I do. Especially because Hayman's connected with Boris. Boris is connected to the Nationals.
Yeah, that's true, you know? Too. So they're probably already pillow,
And I also think
talk.
That Dusty Baker is that old school manager where he's going to pick a closer. Like, he's not going to.
Well, he did say that. He said he will have a closer.
Exactly.
He said he's not doing committee.
So that's why I want to. That's why I want to get that one right, because I'm going to get a closer. And if I really don't think it's Sean Kelly, and the reason I think Coda Glover could be the guy, for whatever it's worth, he's pitched the ninth inning a couple times in spring training. Of course, a lot of these closers are pitching the fifth inning. He's pitched the ninth inning twice. Does it mean anything? I have no idea.
What about the situation in Colorado? A couple of days ago, news broke that the beat writers, the guys who are really tied in, like the Heyman types, but with the Rockies, are saying it's Greg Holland's job. He's going to be their closer. I mean, I was a guy who was taking Ottavino. I love Ottavino's skills. And in my draft last night, Ottavino went like the 12th round. I got Holland in like the 15th round. And... you know, I'm just going off of that news for now. Yeah. He was throwing like 95, so.
That's what I'm reading. It sounds like Holland's going to be the guy. But they're like, if Holland is the guy, it's not going to be long before Ottavino gets in there.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ottavino showed some damn good skills. But, I mean, Greg Holland, if he is the Greg Holland of old, that's going to be pretty tough to pass on.
So, oh boy, that's good. Because Ronan's got Ottavino.
It's all about Rose.
So I've kind of thought that way about Holland from the beginning, because like Greg Holland could have signed anywhere. He signed with the Rockies. I'm like, what the hell are you going to the Rockies for? Because I promised him to be the closer. Let's think about this. We'll give you the opportunity to be the closer. You come here, and we all thought if he had the arm strength, he would take over. Well, he's pitched throughout spring training. He looks fine. He's gonna be the closer.
Well, I think even if he is the primary closer, I think they're gonna be cautious with his. He's not gonna be pitching like back to back to back days. I think Ottavino will still be able to get some saves. He has excellent skills, but it's. I mean, I'm just going off of the recon that I've been able to hear, and all signs point to Holland. So, for me, that should be the guy you draft first.
What about the situation, Matt, with the Brewers and the Twins?
With the Brewers, I think you got to go with Feliz. I don't think he's going to be pretty, but I think right now he's the guy they signed him. They're rebuilding. They're like, look, let's hold the fort down for now. It's Feliz. If you want to go, Corey Knebel, you know, that's a shot, but I think it's Feliz's job. Same. I don't really think he's a threat there. The Twins, I mean, Brandon Kinsler. I mean, but it seems like Brandon Kinsler's the guy.
But he sucks.
But yeah, they said Ryan Presley will not be be in the running for closer. Maybe who's their guy that was Perkins.
Glenn Perkins. You could start on the 60-day DL.
Yeah, but he's a ways away. So I mean, it sounds like it's Kinsler's job, but all saves aren't created equal.
So I read.
I like that.
So I read that yesterday that Glenn Perkins could start on the 60-day DL. And it reminded me of something. So when we come back, oh, crap. I forgot blank. We'll do that next. Okay. Here on the Road Experts. Forgot blank. So we're playing next here on the Road to Experts. Kind of go around and see if you guys forgot stuff. Because I forgot a bunch of stuff. Like, it's now March 20th. 2 weeks away from opening day. And like, baseball's been gone for a while. It's been gone since October. That's a long time. So I forgot that there's no longer a 15-day DL. Do you guys remember that? Do you know that, Corey?
Well, it's a 10-day one,
yeah,
now, right?
Yeah. I forgot that. I didn't remember that.
That's the concussion DL.
No, it's the real DL.
So, yeah, which is kind of better for some pitchers and stuff, I think. I'm more excited
so
about that.
It's a real DL. The 15-day DL is no more. Now there's just a 10-day DL. You bring up pitchers. Great. It's better for pitchers. It's worse for us as fantasy owners. Because the guys that we just mentioned a little while ago, these guys we don't think are going to pitch 200 innings, these younger guys, your Lance McCullers is a perfect example of this. In order to skip starts, they got to throw on the DL. Because if you line it up right, you're only missing one start. And they're going to just keep hiding these guys in the DL. Shoulder soreness, leg soreness, fatigue, migraines, whatever. If you line it up correctly, these guys are only missing one start.
Yeah, one to two. You can miss the two.
If you have an one-off day, it's one. One.
Yeah, I mean, you can play around with things.
Very easily. The 10-day DL is going to allow... To me, hitters doesn't really make a big deal because most of them don't come back on that 15th day anyway. But for pitchers, this is a new way to stash pitchers. Not that we didn't always stash pitchers on the DL, but you're able, if you manipulate it correct, you're able to miss one start.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, you gave a perfect example about Lance McCullers. I mean, yesterday, I think he put the fear of God into pretty much everybody. There was something popped up on Twitter. Lance McCullers was pulled, and he was pulled, and he stopped throwing his fastball. We later found out it was something with his toe ripped through his cleat, and some dirt got in there, and some irritation, so... Funky toe. The arm was good, thank God.
That's the important. That's the important thing. But he could have went on the DL, missed one start.
Yeah, no, with something.
DL, funky toe.
Yeah, foot.
Hey, look, there's going to be some creative injury labels with this 10-day DL. But, you know, I'm fine with it. And, you know, maybe in the long run, I think Houston is trying to work out a strategy with Lance McCullers where they have him the whole season. He's not a guy they want to shut down. So how that works out, I mean, he's a guy, as we spoke, I mean, Steamer is so bullish on this guy, giving him like 183 innings. But, I mean, if that happens, this kid's going to be, you know.
Steamer.
But, you know, talent and the Astros team, which is a team that wants to win. They're ready. The Astros are ready to win. So, I mean, McCullers is one of the more polarizing pitchers in the game right now.
I would say so, yes. Here's something else I forgot, gentlemen. Oh, crap. I forgot that Mitch Moreland is a starting first baseman for the Boston Red Sox. Now, Moreland, a longtime first baseman for the Rangers, who's always this guy that's like, oh, yeah, Mitch Moreland's here. I can't wait till they replace Mitch Moreland. Like, ugh, they're going to let Joey Gallo play first base and send Mitch Moreland on the bench or trade him. We've said that year after year. Now he's a first baseman for the Red Sox. Unquestioned. Hanley Ramirez is the DH. And maybe against lefties, Moreland will sit. But Mitch Moreland is the starting first baseman for the Boston Red Sox. He's batting .375 this spring. Should we be drafting Mitch Moreland?
I think most definitely you should be all over Mitch Moreland. For the price he's going, I mean, he's going so late. He's in that Red Sox lineup. I mean, the guy does hit 20 home runs every year, it seems like. And, I mean, Hanley's another injury guy. So, I mean, I think Moreland creates an opportunity. I was kind of pissed I didn't get him last night. He was a guy I was looking to get. I took Napoli, and then I was hoping, like, I needed a catcher, so I was hoping on the wraparound to grab Moreland, and I just missed out.
What about you, Corey? Are you in on Mitch Moreland?
Yeah, I think you got to be in on Mitch Moreland. He's in a good position, in a good offense, in a good ballpark, and you can get him as a guy that comes a little bit later on in draft. So, Mitch Moreland, how about that?
Yeah, he's someone that can get late in drafts. He's not sexy. Someone would even say he's ugly. And nobody.
I'm looking at his picture right now.
His mama likes him, though. Yeah, his mama thinks he's cute.
But he got a lot of money, so he probably got plenty of women.
But fantasy owners never wanted Mitch Moreland.
No.
But maybe we should. In Boston, in a really good lineup. Where is he batting, Matt? Do we know?
Let me check that. I think like sixth.
That'd be great.
Maybe even. I mean, it depends. I guess maybe righty lefty. You know, he's right when a righty's on the mound.
He's going to be a part of a platoon.
Well, yeah. he's going to be, but he's on the fine side of the platoon.
That's not going to hurt. He's going to get the ABs. Yeah. I mean, and you know, he's a bat that they're going to rely on. He's a bat that's needed. And like I said, he's playing for the Red Sox. You got Yankee Stadium. Camden Yards, Coors East, you know, Toronto. So he's living in a good area code.
I forgot how good of a pitcher Lance Lynn is when he's healthy. Yesterday, he pitched 5 scoreless innings. Where should we be drafting him?
I mean, the only concern I have with Lynn is, you know, he's coming off the TJ. But he's
already pitching well.
No, he's looking good. I mean, he's a guy that I'm going to look later on in drafts. He's not, I just don't want to be relying on Lance Lynn, which I think is fine. You take him late teens or something like that, I'm cool with that. And, St. Louis, another nice team to pitch for. So, I mean, Lynn should definitely be on people's radar. I mean, what are the options there? I mean, I'm taking a guy like Ivan Nova over Lance Lynn, though. I'll tell you straight out right there.
Nah, that's a good call right there.
Would you rather... You're saying Ivan Nova over Lance Lynn. Okay. Would you rather have Lance Lynn or Colin McHugh?
That is a nice comp there. Colin McHugh does have some nice things about it, but I'm going to go Lance Lynn.
Corey?
Lance Lynn. Met roster resource has Mitch Moreland batting eighth.
That's not so good. Lance Lynn or Eduardo Rodriguez?
I kind of like E-Rod.
Rodro.
Yeah, I mean, I'm... So that's where it gets good. You know what? I might go Lance Lynn there because I'll take the National League, the guy that's proven it, but that's razor thin close for me.
Lance Lynn or Alex Cobb?
I think Cobb's going to get moved. I might take the shot on Cobb here. Okay. He was a damn good pitcher before he got hurt. He did pitch some innings last year, which is what I want to see. I don't care what the results were. I'm glad he pitched last season. His spring training to date hasn't been anything fantastic, but like I said, he's on the mound, pitching in games. And he's been tied to some pretty nice teams, like maybe the Dodgers or somebody like that. So I go Cobb on that one.
As he gets healthier, yeah, he threw 78 pitches on Thursday.
Last one for you here, Corey, with Lance Lynn. Lance Lynn or Trevor Bauer?
I guess, I got Bauer in Top Wars. I'm going to go with Trevor Bauer.
Yeah, Corey's going with his team. I understand that. No Bauer for me. I'm going to go the Lance Lynn route. It's not even just the American National League. We've seen what Lynn's been able to do. And not that I don't think Trevor Bauer, but I think it's too mental for him, too. I mean, he has talent, but...
He also flies drones.
Yeah, he kind of steps all over himself all the damn time with all those throwing so many damn pitches.
You gotta be careful with that.
You do. So, I forgot that... Oh, for a while. I didn't forget this recently. But I forgot a couple weeks ago that Carlos Rodon actually ended last year hurt. Or not fatigued, as they call it. So I forgot that until the White Sox brought him along so slowly. And then I kind of remembered it again. He finally debuted in spring training over the weekend. And he looked great. I believe it was 4 scoreless innings for Carlos Rodon. He is a name that we've talked about a bunch because he was a big-time name last year. Really struggled for a lot of the year. So some glimpses, but up and down. Where are we guys on Carlos Rodon as we kind of narrow down draft season?
For me, I like Carlos Rodon. He's not a guy that I'm going to reach for now. Mm-hmm. The potential is there. The talent is there. I like that Chicago's bringing him along slow. There's no there's no need to rush him. We got an extra week of spring training this year as well. And he's one of their guys that are... They have some really nice arms coming up, but I still have certain, is the control there? Not yet. Still a work in progress, but as I mentioned last week, you need that framer. The better framer probably will help him immensely. Of course, you got to get those cold strikes.
Yeah, they want to get him up to 200 innings this season, but
which I like.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But he has to be like Matt said, the command. He has to be more efficient with that. But I think that he's a player that's starting to rise up draft boards. Also, North Carolina State guy, Wolfpack.
Can I ask a question? So I look at NFBC ADB. I got Carlos Rodon here, like by Jay Happ, by Aaron Nola, by Michael Pineda, by Eichhoff, whatever. Some of these guys I told you before, like Lance Lynn and Ivan Nova, like I have both some of the guys I just named for the record. But one of these guys named here, we talked about him on the Fantasy BFFs, which you hear every single day from 1 to 2 p.m., by the way, the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, is Jeff Samardzija. Like, I think Jeff Samardzija is a horrible pitcher, and he looked horrible over the weekend. Why is Jeff Samardzija going in front of all of the names I just mentioned?
You know what it is? Jeff Samardzija is a guy that takes the ball every fifth day. He's in a great...
But he stinks!
But honestly, if you look at Jeff Samardzija's 2016 season, first 2 months were good. It was those middle 2 months where he got, you know, blown up really bad. I mean, it was a train wreck. And then those last 2 months, it was like a three-stage act for Jeff Samardzija. You know what Samardzija's probably going to do this season? Probably something like 380s, get you 380s ERA, get you 190 innings pitched, maybe 165, 170 strikeouts, and get some wins on that team. They got a better bullpen now. He's a guy that you're right to say what you're saying, and a lot of people feel that way. But he's a guy like, you know, when you get into those teen rounds and he's there and you need some security, it's not something you want to do, but I don't think it's a bad thing to do.
I just think there's higher upside guys around that spot.
But yes, you are agreeing about the upside, but that all depends. If you need the innings at that point, like if you made a couple of choices that are a bit risky.
Like Aaron Nola's, you're saying?
Yeah, if you got like Aaron Nola and, you know, a couple guys that we're predicting in the 150 range or so, you do need to start solidifying your rotation as you go throughout the draft. You know, you need, that's why a Matt Shoemaker and a Jared Eichhoff popped to me.
I agree. So I don't mind Eichhoff. I don't mind giving guys a pitch 200 innings. I just want guys that aren't terrible. That's what I feel like Jeff Samardzija is.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the 2 years ago, everybody thought he was ready for the breakout. I mean, I was kind of one of them. He put it this way. He's not going to live up to the expectations we had, but I don't think he's as bad as the taste that was left in everybody's mouth.
When we come back here, we wrap up the program. Little thoughts on the WBC, a classic WBC tournament for the United States. Will it change the thoughts of the United States for the future? Could it have that much of an impact? I ask the guys as we wrap up the show, coming up next. So much of the talk about the WBC from the United States perspective was that the U.S. is great if everybody would play. Clayton Kershaw, Max Scherzer, Chris Bryant, Mike Trout, Bryce Harper. Our best of the best didn't make the trip. Of course, they just had to go to San Diego or Miami, but nevertheless, they didn't make the trip. And instead, we got, like, you know, the second-tier guys and the third-tier guys. And all right. It'll be fun. Some people have been really, really into the WBC. As you guys know, and this isn't a secret, I've been much more into March Madness than the World Baseball Classic. Like, I was into it with Israel. And I've actually, in all honesty, found, like, my interest kind of waned. Like, my roommate the other night, I had the U.S. game on. He's like, this tournament's still going on? I'm like, yeah. Like, I can't believe it either. Like, I was really into it. Like, when Israel, like, that first week, they had all those upsets. All right, I'm super into the WBC. Now it's been, like, 3 weeks later. I'm like, all right, I'm ready for the Yankees now. And have you guys found, and we'll get to the U.S. clock in 1 second. Have you guys found that your interest has waned at all? Like, it's just been like, all right, I'm kind of bored of this already.
Not for me. Actually, okay. It's quite the opposite. Okay. I wasn't really excited about the WBC, but the games have just been too good, and they've gotten only better and better. So, I mean, I'm in. I like to watch it. You know, unfortunately, my wife wanted to watch Allied, so I had to watch it on a little tape delay.
But, I mean, that's like a real, that's like a real commitment. Like, you actually DVR'd the World Baseball Classic. Like, that's not like DVRing a playoff game. You DVR'd the World Baseball Classic. Not even the finals or the semifinals. A second round game.
And I even made sure to show my wife the next morning which she made me have to wait on for Allied,
which Rotten Tomatoes says was terrible.
Yeah.
The tournament has been a blast. Tournament has been a bomb. I've definitely been into it. Then seeing, you know, Team USA with the big victory the other night, now they get to go on to the semifinal round and championship round.
It's tonight, facing Japan.
They play Japan tonight. I thought Netherlands and Puerto Rico played tonight.
I thought they played Japan tonight. Did I make that
USA
up?
And Japan.
I feel like Florida. Feel
it
like
definitely
you know
is a game tonight.
Yeah,
I think it might be Netherlands and Puerto Rico tonight, though.
All right.
I think USA and Japan is tomorrow.
The World Baseball
night.
Classic.
It's Netherlands, Puerto Rico at 9
damn
p.m.
It. And tomorrow you play Japan?
Tomorrow, yes.
Yeah, USA and Japan is tomorrow.
All right. Now, do the winners of those two teams play each other? Is that
for the chip.
Now, is that a chip 2 out of 3 or is it 1 game? Let me know that.
I think it's one game. I think, yeah.
I think we are down to final elimination.
Yeah, single elimination now. Yeah, this single is elimination. It. They got to get back. Season getting ready to start soon. Yeah. They got to get back.
We do.
We got to do a scouting report on Japan, man.
Do you think, with all the excitement now, the quote-unquote excitement around the U.S. team, right? Like Adam Jones' historic catch, quote-unquote historic catch, Stanton's bomb, Yelich's double. There was a lot of hype, and maybe because it was Saturday night, maybe it was because it was against a Dominican Republic team that does have all their stars with it. Like, if you want to call a rival in the WBC, it's the U.S.'s rival. Maybe it's because all of that and all the circumstances worked out well.
See, I think everybody is the U.S.
I don't think so. Do you find Puerto Rico, the Netherlands, or Japan the U.S. rival?
No, I think I think when those teams play the United States, I think the United States become the rival.
But the rivalry is
Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico. Obviously, that ship has sailed now. That's would have been the one people would have thought would have been in this championship round. But I think when the U.S. is in it, then everybody looks at the U.S. as a rival.
No, I don't care about that. I care about from our perspective. From our perspective, you look at the DR.
And Puerto Rico are the rivals, right. The Latin America. Country.
But I think Puerto Rico is like this WBC's version of what the Dominican Republic were last time around.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, Puerto Rico was rolling. They dyed their hair blonde. I even tweeted out a picture from me 17 years ago. I was like, I used to play for Team Puerto Rico. I had the blonde hair. I forgot about that one.
I gotta find this photo.
Right. Seth Lugo.
Yeah, I mean, look, Puerto Rico has been damn impressive. I like them a lot. It's going to be an interesting game because the Netherlands have been surprising.
Okay, but my question was, though, with all the excitement and all the hype from the weekend, it's not about who's going to win tonight or tomorrow or whatever, but my question is, will this excitement in 4 years convince the best of the best to come play?
I hope so. Like, it's got to be a time where we like, you know what, Where these players are like, you know what, let me go out here. I need the Mike Trouts. You know what I'm saying? I need the Bryce Harpers. I need Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, the big young American stars to step up and do the right thing, in my opinion. We saw it with the Dream Team. Years ago, the Dream Team fell off, and they were just sending people out there, and the U.S. took a tumble. And then, of course, LeBron, Kobe, the big dogs got back in it and put American back on top in basketball. And I think it's going to be tougher in baseball, but I think it's easier. And I think seeing this WBC and what Adam Jones and guys like that are doing, I think it puts more. I think now, if you was to go to spring training fields today and put a microphone in some of these top players in Major League Baseball's face and say, would you consider the WBC next go around? I think me and them would say, yeah.
So I think more so, Matt, I think more so you'll get the yeses from a Trout, a Harper, than like a Scherzer and a Kershaw, because I think if you look at the pitching,
pitchers
like
is tough.
The pitchers are tough. Have Arenado there, of course. You have Giancarlo Stanton there, but pitching wise, I mean, it's Stroman, it's Danny Duffy, it's Tanner Roark, Marcus Chris Archer rather, like Kane then left, and then he's gonna come back, but he's not coming back. And pitching wise, I don't think you're gonna get the best of the best.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, Max Scherzer, I think Corey broke it down excellent. That was a really good breakdown. But like Max Scherzer did commit to pitching for the Team USA, but he has an uncle.
Okay, I'm sorry. You just tagged us in this blonde hair. you look like I don't know if it's a vampire, like someone that's someone that's gonna kill me. And is this your girlfriend or sister? Or
no, that was my friend's girlfriend at the time.
I feel like you're going to. I don't know what you're gonna do to this.
Yeah,
poor woman.
That was a 27 year old Matt Modica.
Yeah, you're 27 years old here.
Yep.
Oh,
this is a good look, you know.
Is it? Yeah, don't you think this person's going to kill you?
I don't think he's going to. Okay. I know his eyes is looking right at me in this photo.
Well, there's a lot of drinking and stuff going on. This
is good looking. Good times. How about that?
I feel like this girl's like trying to like beg for her life. She's looking, help me. Help me.
But I understand with the pitching and stuff, but see, remember how Coach K came in and took over USA Basketball?
Changed everything.
Maybe they need somebody to take over USA Baseball. Maybe it could be Coach K.
Jim Leland was he got a lot of flack for that lineup that he set.
He did, but I don't. But like, it's also Leland's job. Like, he has to get these guys ready for the season, which is also a priority because that's what they get paid for. So I think we're never going to see the pitching go. Like, there's just it's just too, honestly, valuable.
but valuable. They're so routine, and you're not going to get the best of the best because those teams that are paying them hundreds of millions of dollars, literally, they're not going to let Scherzer and Kershaw go. I mean, even though Scherzer did commit, as you said, it just seems unlikely you're going to get those guys to show up.
But I do think that
Syndergaard too, of course.
Yeah, but I do think next time around, players will be more willing to at least have at least one turn, like Archer pitched left. I think they want to be a part of it.
I agree with that. And certainly, like, and it's good for the game. When Bryce Harper is a Yankee in 2 years, you're going to have, like, that, like, David Wright, a Captain America, like, yeah. Bryce Harper, big USA guy, plays for the Yankees.
He's
going to kill me when Harper goes to the Yankees.
Yeah. Yeah, don't worry about it.
As long as you expect it, it won't hurt you so much.
I do fully expect it to happen. Yeah.
So when he goes to the Yankees, he'll go play for Team USA. All be well.
Yep.
Come next, COGs, Old School Fantasy, Corey Parson.
Try to do a little something.
Scott Angle, and of course, George Kurtz. From Matt Modica and Corey Parson, I'm Greg Sussman. We'll be back right here tomorrow, 8 a.m. Eastern. It's the Roto Experts in the Morning. Have a wonderful rest of your Monday, everybody. Start the week right. We'll see ya.